My apologies, Judge Randolph, for not having the citations before. The restructuring request is at JA 68 at SEC. It was filed July 24th. They're actually, with all due
respect. 1020 or 5?
JA.
In which case?
In this, in the.
1020
case.
Okay.
There is FCC authority for.
This is the renegotiation request.
Correct.
Oh.
There is FCC authority, and we cited it, for restructuring debt obligations. With all due respect to FCC counsel, it's 1.925 of the FCC's rules. And we also sought relief under the FCC's general rule waiver authority, 1.3 of the FCC's rules. It's also critical to note that at all times the FCC acted as if we were not in default. When we submitted the request for restructuring, the FCC hired an accounting firm. They sent their attorneys to negotiate with the gentleman who is here in this courtroom, Bob Rose. They filed UCCs securing the FCC assets after they now claim that those licenses had automatically terminated. 5 years later, they renewed those UCCs. Now, the facts that trouble them, they drop into footnotes in their briefs. And they say, their lawyers at Justice say, well, you know, you can't secure something that doesn't exist. But they created the assets. They created the security, the FCC licenses. They sure as heck should have known when they filed and they renewed their UCCs that those assets existed. And they did. Because independent of the automatic termination rules that the FCC heavily relies on, there are rights under the contract. They cannot ignore those. They cannot collapse them and hide behind Chevron. There's a dispute resolution process.
I thought the contract, though, refers, unless I'm mistaken, refers to the regulations. Isn't that their point?
Not exclusively, Your Honor. Absolutely not. The contract says you're entitled to whatever grace periods or other rights are available to you under the FCC's regulations. So what the FCC is saying is, oh.
And then they tighten the regulations. They have a very strict rule. We went through this in Morris. And
Morris's case is different, Your Honor. I'm obviously pretty familiar with that one.
I know. It's a tougher, it was a harsher case in many respects.
The factual, legal, and significant distinction is here. We have a borrower exercising their contract rights with the government as the lender in a timely manner, independent of the FCC's automatic
grace period. Right. When you say in a timely manner, you mean they asked for a waiver before the automatic cancellation.
Let's not confuse the terms, Your Honor, with all due respect. Not a waiver. They asked for extension of the payments.
Mm-hmm.
They never said they weren't going to pay. They said, let's sit down and negotiate and restructure the loans under 1.925.
The rules, there was going to be an automatic cancellation on July 31st.
Unless you did one of two
things.
Something
happened.
Exactly.
And nothing happened.
And something did happen. Prior to that automatic cancellation, the borrower did not just sit idly by. They exercised their rights under the contract to renegotiate the debt. They did not say we just want additional time. They said let's renegotiate. And that started a process that's independent of the 2-3 month automatic grace period rules. It's a completely independent process.
What happened to the, I know what happened to the waiver request. What happened to this restructuring request that you filed in 2010?
That's an excellent question, Your Honor. It's still pending, as nearly we know. It's referred both in the Bureau's order.
You don't have a final judgment with respect to this document.
Well, here's where it gets a little above my pay scale, Your Honor. We're in bankruptcy now. I mean, I would have thought before the FCC issued that order in 10-1010-1020, since it deals with assets of the estate, that unless we're going to act favorably and grant our restructuring requests or reinstate the licenses, that the automatic stay says you can proceed. So I'm with you on this. My understanding, I'm certainly no bankruptcy expert, but I've read Collier on bankruptcy, and this court decided that volume, and I read the entire chapter on 362, I can assure you. It's broad. The automatic stay covers everything that this agency does that's not regulatory and police. It ought to have covered this restructuring request. So what ought to happen is, like it or not, Brother Block and everybody else at DOJ and all their kindred spirits at Treasury, they ought to be back in bankruptcy with us, talking about a request to restructure the loan. That's how the bankruptcy code works.
Well, one way of looking at it, I guess the FCC would look at it, is they don't have to make any judgment about this restructuring request because it's moot. You don't have a license to restructure.
That's what they did. They sent a letter saying it was returning the request for restructuring right. without action.
Not because the license is gone away. That's... We're unclear as to the implications of that letter. But we do know because at least two of the people who participated in those negotiations are here in this courtroom. We do know that after that letter was issued, these negotiations continued at the FCC. Scout's honor. I was there. So was Bob Rose.
Further questions on this case? No. You want to tell us about your the other case?
The other one? I share Judge Randolph's confusion because we have, to an extent, collapsed the two.
Yes.
But we're back with the bankruptcy case. It should be clear by now that I am not a bankruptcy expert. But the scope of the automatic stay under 362 is quite broad. It is intended to cover all interests of the debtor, equitable, legal, and otherwise. When the FCC opted to pursue foreclosure in August of 2008, they did so at their own peril. At that point, Alpine had already been in bankruptcy. Not that we had an obligation under the bankruptcy code to provide notice to creditors, it's automatic, but we did. We notified the FCC. We had previously submitted a motion for a stay to give them another opportunity to voluntarily not foreclose, but they went ahead and did it anyway. That action, the August resale of Alpine Spectrum, was clearly a foreclosure against the assets. Now, the FCC's argument to Judge Teel, and I think it was unfair of them, and that they take umbrage at my arguments in their briefs, but too bad. I think basically they ambushed a judge and expected him to become an expert on FCC foreclosure and C-block regulations overnight, and that's not the way it's supposed to work. When the automatic stay is in place, you as a creditor have an obligation to stand down. They did not. They did this 10 years ago to Next Wave, so certainly by now they should have known exactly what they were doing. When they went ahead and held that re-auction, they were foreclosing against...
Next Wave, the company had petitioned for bankruptcy before the installment payments were due. Right?
Correct.
That's the key distinction.
As far as the FCC is.
Right. No.
Right. Correct. And the FCC would also like us to believe in Santa Claus, I guess. But the law and facts are not there. In this case, 10 years ago, the FCC told the New York courts... And this circuit court, that when they foreclosed, when they held that second auction, and they did resell Next Wave Spectrum. I mean, Verizon and a bunch of other folks bid $6 billion for assets that Next Wave had bid $3 billion for. The FCC said in open court, that is tantamount to a foreclosure on the assets. This is, I mean, it's not like we have too many examples, right? Of this type of collateral asset and this and the way these security agreements work. So the court's asking the FCC. And the FCC says it's a foreclosure. Of course it is. And that's exactly what they did in August of 2008 while the automatic stay was in place. Even if they're right and I'm wrong, which happens a lot when I go up against the FCC, even if they're wrong and those license interests were gone, Alpine's license interests were gone, by the time we got to the August auction, Judge Tattle has still acknowledged in his order that we had at least two rights. We had a legal right to request reinstatement of those licenses, and we had this wacky thing that the FCC calls a discretionary equitable interest, which the UCC has a better term for it. And again, I part company with the FCC's counsel. If you look in the loan agreements, it says they're governed under UCC. The FCC does not get to just sort of pick and choose when American contract law applies to their contracts.
How'd the district court, bankruptcy court characterize it?
He adopted the FCC's language. He says Alpine has a discretionary equitable interest in the proceeds. Okay. Why weren't they protected under the automatic stay? They turn out to be worth at least $5.5 million, at least. We know that because the bad auction that they proceeded to have when they broke the cars into three parts and refused to allow the wealthiest people in the United States to come bid for them, those bad auctions, as lousy as they were, recovered at least $5.5 million of the value of the debt between Alpine and the FCC. So we know what that discretionary equitable interest is worth at a minimum. So it cannot be true as a matter of law that the FCC gets to unilaterally decide these issues. They get to decide, do we have offset rights? How much of those offset rights? I've read that letter that you've cited several times, Judge Ginsburg, and that the FCC has cited, and it's just one man's opinion. General counsel, he happens to be a very bright guy, Bill Kinnard, went on to be FCC chairman.
What's your answer to the contention that if you had paid cash for the licenses and then lost them, and they were re-auctioned, that you wouldn't be entitled to any money back?
Well, I'm not sure I followed the question, Your Honor. I will say Alpine did pay $14 million to the FCC, at least. They paid a 10% upfront deposit, and they were $14 million in the hole to the FCC at the... If you'd restate, I'm not sure I'm following what the question was, Your Honor.
I may have misunderstood the hypothetical then. Yeah.
But it...
I thought in the brief as well that the FCC was claiming that these were the functional equivalent of leases. Is that an argument that I recall that
they did make that argument? They've made a lot of arguments, Your Honor. In perfect candor, I don't understand them at all. It's a heads we win, tails you lose argument. Their briefs say, look, you know, if you win under the contracts, you lose under administrative regulations. If you win under administrative regulations, well, we're going to cite the contracts. And if the UCC helps you out, well, we have discretion not to honor the UCC. Why? I don't know why. I don't have an answer to that question, Your Honor. All I know is I represent a company that's $14 million in the hole to the federal government. The federal government says the timely request we made to keep those licenses alive is meaningless because why? Because our regulations say so, and we're now going to ignore the contract. Oh, and get this. The security agreement, Mr. Joyce, it doesn't exist anymore now. I don't understand these arguments. Where does that come from? The security agreement that was hand in glove with an installment note agreement that these bright attorneys at the FCC drafted, that security agreement says the terms of this will be incorporated into the loan documents that they now want to enforce against Alpine, but suddenly the security agreement has just vanished into thin air. I can't respond to these kind of arguments because I don't understand them, and I've never seen them before. That argument is in their brief, but they cite no legal authority to support it whatsoever. They just made it up. So here we are, 10 years later, and now the FCC is telling us that we don't even have an obligation to honor bankruptcy law. If it turns out that we can recover $5.5 million from these folks who bid for this stuff, we'll get back to you, and we'll let you know if maybe we're going to apply those proceeds to your contract.
Here's and what the bankruptcy court said about your discretionary equitable interest that you said it recognized. The FCC is acting in the ongoing auction wearing its regulatory hat, not that of a creditor collecting a debt from pledged collateral. Any effect the auction may have on Alpine via the FCC's applying equitable principles in the exercise of its discretion, as established in the Debt Collection Act and in federal claims collection standards to treat the proceeds as an offset against Alpine's debt, would arise only after the re-auction and would be only incidental to the outcome of the regulatory process, and not as a result of an act designed to collect the FCC's claim against Alpine. That's recognition of your interest in a very limited and remote context. If it recognizes that the commission may, after the auction, decide that you have an interest that it should in its discretion recognize. Didn't see any obstacle there to proceeding with the auction, that's for sure.
All I can say is, Your Honor, the FCC bamboozled the bankruptcy judge, and we're regretting it. There's no legal foundation for the FCC to make that sort of assertion. There's none. I think perhaps hyper-technically what they're
saying. We don't recognize any interest. Would you be better off?
They can't. There's a binding contract. It's governed under.
The contract says you have an interest to the extent regulations then enforced give you one.
No, it says more than that. It says this contract will be governed under uniform commercial law. It said it will also be governed under concepts of federal common law. It says that right in the contract. They drafted it, not me. They're not the greatest contracts. It's not something that you and I would have drafted, but they're there. They can't ignore that. They tried these arguments. They dusted these off against Next Wave. And I would have thought we would be well past that by now. They can't put themselves in the role of a lender and then, when things go wrong, suddenly say, well, now we're exercising our regulatory rights to foreclose on the assets, and we will only choose, if we care to honor your contract rights. It just doesn't work that way, and that's what this court's finding in Next Wave says, and that's what the Supreme Court said. Justice Scalia practically laughed the FCC out of court and said, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as an FCC exception to contract law. There's no such thing as an FCC exception to bankruptcy law.
Let's hear what the government says about that.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Kelsey Brown Corker, and I'm here on behalf of the FCC. In this appeal, Alpine is challenging the denial of its motion for a declaration that the automatic stay of 362 precluded the FCC from moving forward with its auction. And under that procedural posture, the only legally relevant issue before this court is whether the district court and the bankruptcy court correctly held that the licenses the Alpine won at auction in 1996 were not part of its estate in 2008 because those licenses had automatically canceled 6 years earlier due to nonpayment by Alpine. I think Judge Ginsburg was getting at this just a minute ago, but what's not an issue in this case is the validity of the structure of the auction. That would be a separate case. And what's also not an issue in this case is the offset issue. As the bankruptcy court pointed out, offset isn't what was requested by the motion for a declaration that was presented by Alpine. It's also premature. No decisions have been made about offset in this case because the licenses haven't yet been awarded to the licensee that won at the auction. So most of what my opposing counsel has said before this court is not legally relevant to this case.
The motion was only what?
It was a motion for a declaration that the automatic stay precluded the agency from moving forward with the auction.
With the auction.
And so the legally relevant question is, were the licenses part of the estate at the time that Alpine filed for bankruptcy? If they weren't part of the estate, then the automatic stay doesn't apply, and if they were, well, then you would be in the next wave situation. So I think Mr. Block spent some time talking about the reasons that the automatic cancellation occurred in 2002, and I don't want to spend too much time repeating those points, but I will add, you know, as we were talking about earlier, the waiver request that Alpine filed the day before cancellation occurred was a waiver request under 1.925, which just gives the agency general waiver authority to essentially waive any of the rules relating to wireless services. If it were true that if Alpine's position were correct, then any party could prevent an enforcement of an FCC rule simply by filing a request for a waiver with the agency. That can't be correct. There's no basis for that position anywhere in the regulations or in the license documents here. I'm happy to rest on the arguments in our brief or to answer any questions.
How about the request for restructuring that was filed a few days before the waiver request? Why isn't that an extension of payments within the meaning of the note?
Two points. One is that Alpine's opening brief doesn't, I think the fairest reading of Alpine's opening brief is that they aren't relying on the restructuring request. They only refer to the request for waiver under 1.925. But my second response to that is, again, that's not the reference
where
in the note.
I remember that now. Where in the opening brief was that exactly?
Throughout the opening brief, there are references to the request for waiver. There are not references to the request for restructuring, at least not in the context of that request tolling. In the bankruptcy case. That's right. And I assumed, when I received the opening brief, I assumed the reason that opposing counsel didn't make that argument was because of that January 2004 letter from the agency returning the debt restructuring request to Alpine and stating that they were not going to act on it. And Alpine never...
Well, apart from the fact that they didn't raise it in the opening brief, yeah. What's your response to that? So we don't have a response by you because they didn't raise it in the opening.
Right. Now, 2 points. One is that there was that January 2004 letter, which functioned as a denial of that request, said that the agency was not going to act on it. Alpine never appealed that letter, so that their initial...
If that's the final order, then they're contesting it as out of time?
Yes, they have not contested it up to this point, 6 years, or I guess, yes, 6 years later at this point. But I think more importantly, a debt restructuring request is not the same as a request for a grace period or an extension of payments.
I don't know
the
if that's more important. I mean,
there are three different... ways to reject that argument. Are there any other questions about the government's position in this case?
Thank you, Ms. Corcoran.
Thank you.
I respectfully disagree with the Justice Department's characterization of our arguments. The request for restructuring was addressed in both briefs, initial briefs, both of them. As I mentioned during my argument before on under 1010, the FCC has referred to our pending request for restructuring in the January 2010 order that is on reconsideration before this court. It's referenced in footnote 1 of that order. We have consistently pursued requests for restructuring under loan agreements. And the process now that we're in bankruptcy ought to work like this. The FCC ought to be ordered to undo the foreclosure because they did so in violation of the automatic stay.
Can you give me the exact page and language in which you argued that the restructuring order constituted restructuring request constituted a request to extend payments? What page is that on?
Start at page 19 of our brief. Starting at page 14.
The 5293 brief, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, page 14.
Page 14, starting at the top. Negotiations between Alpine.
That's the factual recitation, isn't it?
It is part of our argument, Your Honor.
Your argument doesn't start till page 19, and what I'm asking you is where in the argument you make the contention that the restructuring request constituted a request for extension of payments?
Page 25. Second paragraph.
What language?
The only way to reconcile the grace period order with the event of default language in the note is how Alpine has read them, to be complementary, not mutually exclusive. At precisely the time when the FCC could have voided the event of default language in the note, legally vanquishing a borrower's right to submit a request in writing for an extension of payments, the FCC chose not to do so.
Where does that refer to your request for restructuring?
That the language extension of payments is from the note. It is.
That's from the note, but the argument that the FCC says you do not make in your brief is that the request for restructuring constituted a request for extension of payments.
They are the same. They are the same, Your Honor.
Well, where is it that you make that argument? That's all I'm asking.
It is passing in our brief. It is that we've
abolished that term in this court, by the way.
I didn't see that.
It's in the rules.
I didn't see that memorandum.
That was in the rules. It's in the law.
I know. I didn't use that language in our brief. I'm using it in the colloquial sense, Judge Randolph. With all due respect, I follow the point that you're making, and I disagree with the government's characterization of our position.
Okay, we'll look at it.
Offset is at issue. It is most certainly at issue here. I just don't follow a government attorney's argument to say that it's not. We did not have an obligation under the automatic stay provisions to specify to Judge Teel what rights, and to specify to the FCC for that matter, what rights of the debtor ought to be protected and what can't be protected under the automatic stay. It doesn't work that way. All of the property of the estate, all of the rights of the debtor are supposed to be protected. That's how the automatic stay works. So to the extent that Judge Teel has said, and they haven't appealed that argument, that's now binding law. To the extent that Judge Teel has said in his order, affirmed by Judge Motz, that we have had at least equitable interest in the proceeds of that auction, that means that the automatic stay applied. So they shouldn't have proceeded and foreclosed. That's the way it works.
Mr. Joyce, I think we have your argument.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much.
Honorable Court, now stands adjourned until Monday morning at 9:30.